Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Patrick, can you lend me a few bucks? And tonight, can you get us a ride?
I guess so. Why?
Gotta make it through the tunnel. Got a meeting with a man on the other side.
This doesn't sound like such a good idea.
Okay, so we're at Mike's house.
Yes, we are again. I love it here.
I know, so do I.
Yeah.
It's so comforting.
Yeah, it's nice. It really is. It's nice to check in every now and then. It gives you a sense of like center, and it's like a security blanket.
It is.
Yeah,
totally.
It's beautiful.
So this is exciting. We have a lot of stuff going on this week here.
We do.
So let's just introduce ourselves here, get that done with. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick
Foster. If you are new to the show because you wanted to listen to Springsteen Week, let me just tell you that basically this is it. We get together every day and we talk about whatever music is on our minds. Mm-hmm. It can be new. It can be classic. It can be interviews with people. It can be all kinds of stuff, right?
Yep.
And special guests, our friends, all that kind of thing.
It could be perfect pop.
Right. There's all kinds of stuff we talk about. Go back to our archive. Visit suburbspod.com. You can certainly find a show that you would like to listen to beyond just Bruce Springsteen. But for this week, that's who we're talking about. And it is because he has a new album coming out the end of this week.
That's right.
It's called Western Stars. We thought this would be a good time to revive something we've done in the past, which is where we talk about five albums from one artist, mm-hmm. one each day through the week. This one sort of lines up perfectly for that because we found a period of Bruce's career where you can take five consecutive albums and they're pretty much considered among his best work.
That's
really
right.
Kind of an amazing stretch for any one artist here. So not to slight the other records.
No,
we're
not
gonna
at
mention
all.
Those. We might reference those, talk about those in a little bit, but we're going to go a little more in depth, starting with the third album, Born to Run, and leading up to Born in the USA to round out the week.
Perfect.
And it really is, I think, to a lot of people, sort of like the core of the Springsteen career. Okay.
Yep.
But before we do all that, let's introduce, first of all, people we have.
We have guests.
Mention we're at Mike's house. Mike Snyder, hello.
Guys, good to have you here. A fun topic. I'm a big Springsteen fan, and it's going to be a good week.
And then also we have with us...
Intern Sam.
Sam
hey,
Lisker.
Hey, Sam.
So listeners to the show know Sam does pretty much a ton of work.
Oh, yes.
And is compensated... at all for that?
With our love.
Yeah. I just gave him a mixtape.
That's right.
Today.
Yeah.
He got that.
So we got that.
So, oh, yeah.
So, but intern Sam, is he still intern Sam? What does that mean?
Well,
he's
Jim,
not in college anymore,
no,
right?
He's
he just
not.
Graduated.
Yeah, he graduated. He looks so employed over there on the other side of the table. He's gotten his first job out of college. Sam, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Feels good to be full-time, working full-time in journalism, which is a lot of fun.
That's great.
And, I started just last week, so yeah, feels good.
Wonderful.
I mean, I will say quickly, I doubt that Sam would have been hired without his work on Rockin' the Summer. So it seems pretty much the
thing. I think
thing,
it certainly played a part.
I'm sure it put it right over the top.
So we get a percentage?
I
Is
think
that
so.
How it works?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
He gives us 75% of his salary.
I think that's how it works. Okay. And then also, I want to give a shout out to a new patron have on the show. So
excellent.
If you go to patreon.com/suburbspod, you will see a place there where you can help out the show financially and mm-hmm. help keep it going. We have many expenses.
We do.
Apparently one of which is not paying our interns, but we'll get to that later when that class action lawsuit gets filed. But it does help keep the show going. Just give a small monthly donation there. And one of the things you get is a shout out. And so shout out to Joe Fleischer.
Nice, Joe. Fantastic.
Yes.
Thank you, Joe.
Man.
Yes.
I will say one thing about that. Death to false metal.
That's right. Joe has been a listener and a supporter for some time. He's in North Carolina.
He's an awesome
dude, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he's a metal fan.
That's right.
Not exclusively.
No.
But he does... point us to some of the better metal that's happening these days.
That's
stuff
right.
That is not false.
That's right.
That's right.
And occasionally we'll travel back to the mother country and give us a report on his visits to those nations. So that's
right.
Pretty awesome.
That's
too.
Right. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Joe.
There is a special patron friend of Suburbs Pod sticker
Sweet.
On the way to Joe. You'll be getting that. All right. Oh, and then one more thing. Sorry, there's one more little bit of business we have to cover here. We have a live event coming up.
Oh, yeah. This is great.
So if you are in the Washington, D.C. area, you can see us for reals on Tuesday, June 25th. Mm-hmm. We are going to moderate a book signing.
It's
going to
be great.
Signing, reading, mm-hmm. Q&A session with author Robert Dean Lurie, and he just wrote a book called Begin the Begin, REM's Early Years.
Yep.
So
fantastic.
That's really awesome. I know you're looking forward to reading that book.
Really looking forward to reading the book, the early days in Athens and how all that stuff came together, how they met and how that early music happened.
So Robert's going to be appearing at the O Museum in the Mansion. That is at 2020 O Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. We will start this thing at 6:30, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, on Tuesday, June 25th. So stop on by. Here's the great thing about it. It's free.
Free.
But reservations are required.
All you got to do is save your spot.
Yeah. So if you go to suburbspod.com, we'll have a link there where you can go to this O Museum
yep.
site and you can reserve your spot. And there are some little add-ons here like drink tickets.
Ooh.
So apparently there are refreshments to be had.
Nice.
At this event. So we hope you'll come out to that. As I mentioned,
please do.
We're going to be moderating that and recording it for future podcasts. And so if you have questions for Robert, you'll be able to answer those and
yep.
and it'll you get your voice on the show and mm-hmm. all of that kind of stuff. It's going to be really a lot of fun, don't you think?
I think it's going to be great. And we'll also throw a link up there where you can get the book if you want to get that before yep. before the show.
Yep. All right. So that's going to be cool. All right. Springsteen, guys. As I mentioned, this five-album run we're going to talk about, we're going to start with Born to Run.
Yes.
1975. I believe on our old show, we dedicated an episode to Born to
That's
Run.
Right.
So we're kind of revisiting that. But we have new voices here
we do.
As well. So
yeah.
That'll be good.
If you want to hear me get real emotional, go back and listen to the old show, Born to Run episode. Yeah.
But before
kinda
we
hold it together
before we
time.
Talk about that, let's say where Bruce was in his career here. And I know you were a little upset that we're not talking about the Wild Innocent and the E Street Shuffle, right? So
yep.
Is there anything you want to mention about the first two records, Greetings and,
well,
and Wild Innocent?
Yeah, I'll do it really quickly. I mean, obviously, the first record, Greetings from Asbury Park, was, you know, Bruce was signed to Columbia Records by John Hammond, who had signed some really famous people like Bob Dylan and Billie Holiday. But it was basically a singer-songwriter record that was heavily influenced by Dylan's long word strings, and he was, like many other people, tagged with that new Dylan tag, and that really wasn't what he was about. He had played with bands for years, you know, played loud, long sets of rock and roll in bars up and down the East Coast, and what I love so much about the second record, The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle, is that it captured that spirit, you know, not quite maybe as heavy as some of his earlier work in different bands, but that loose, freewheeling poetry of the streets of New York. It is probably his last really youthful record. I think Bruce acknowledges with Born to Run that he had a maturing process and his lyrics got more focused. But how can you fault a song like Rosalita or New York City Serenade? I mean, the beauty and the poetry and just everything kind of spilling out all at once. The E Street Band wasn't quite fully formed on that second record. They had a few members that, you know, went on to be on the famous group. But I just love that album. And Kitty's Back is another, you know, favorite. And all those things, just these long, you know, kind of just poetry just flying yeah. out of his mouth, you know, poetry vomit that Bruce did so well, poetry of the streets.
Right. But for Born to Run, he knew he needed a hit album.
That's right.
And as you mentioned, the E Street Band, as we sort of know it, really became formed here with this record. They added Professor Roy Bittan.
Yep.
They added Max Weinberg.
Yes.
And Steve Van Zandt really took a major role,
that's right,
I think, in crafting mm-hmm. this record. And I think that's really important to recognize because, you know, over years we've known little Steven as sort of being, you know, Bruce's right-hand man or,
right,
or partner or what have you. And they'd known each other for a long time. They went yeah, way back. But I think this album was really where that relationship took form in a mm-hmm. meaningful way. I don't even think Van Zandt was officially part of the E Street Band at this time. He came in to sort of like help him produce
right,
the record, help
mm-hmm.
him record it. But what you see here is that he becomes Bruce's production partner. And also, to a large extent, he's kind of like the musical director of the mm-hmm. band. You know what I mean? He does arrangements. He sort of points everybody in the right direction, knows how to get the most out of them.
Yes.
And the songs here became, to a large extent, more focused.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as you mentioned, less wordy, but there's still a certain density in there that gives them weight.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's, I think, more precise.
Yeah, exactly.
To a large extent, right?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the other thing that little Steven did was help Bruce finish the record. Bruce struggled very hard to finish it. It was 14 months to record this album, and he was obsessed with, you know, the wall of sound production that he wanted to try to give to this, and little Steven helped him get it out the door and yes, basically say, you got to finish this thing at some
point. And that's
point,
a huge thing too, and I promise I'm going to let other guys talk here in a second here, but that wall of sound that Phil Spector sort of approach to
yeah,
recording, I think, again, if you know anything about Steve Van Zandt, he's a huge fan of like that 60s pop
right,
kind of sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he brought a lot of that sensibility to this. And you see that carry on through some of these other records we're going to talk about later in the week.
Yeah. And very simply, Bruce once said, Roy Orbison singing Bob Dylan produced by Spector is what he was trying to go
yeah,
for with this
cool, so, Mike, what's your relationship to Born to Run? Did you have this back in the day? Did you come into it later?
So this was an album that, I grew up in listening to album-oriented radio. I don't know if they called it that at the time, but, you know, let's see. When this came out in 75.
So
yeah, I was mm-hmm. 13 years old. So I really wasn't into Bruce Springsteen at the time. However, I saw his name in Rolling Stone. I was probably yes, more listening to Kansas and, you know, what we would call classic rock now. However, those were the first songs that really started, other than Rosalita, really started getting on the radio. So he began to get on my radar, and he would really hit the radar a little bit later. But since then, I've gone back and, you know, absorbed this album many times. And I went back and looked at some of the sections in his book, you know, and he talks about how he really, he was under pressure. They were out of money, you know, and he needed to find a way to kind of edit himself, but keep that operatic, big storytelling mm-hmm. Aspects he had in those earlier records. And that's what took him so much time. As you said, Patrick, it was editing and finding the right words, because right, he couldn't just throw out all the words like he used to. I mean, he didn't throw them out, you know what I mean? But I mean, he didn't worry about having, you know, a rush of lyrics. Here he really wanted everyone to be exactly right, along with the overall sound and the production. So, you know, when you go back and listen to it now, it's still like, I mean, it's classic sound. It was great that they accomplished what they did, and that's where that kickstarted them to this great line of albums, and then yeah, the career that we still have now, where he could learn to go work with the E Street Band and go do his own solo stuff. So,
well said, Mike. And I think, you know, that ability for him to finish that was something he needed to mature as an artist. So I think that's a great point.
And there's only 8 songs on this record.
That's an
too,
amazing thing. Yeah.
Sam, what about you? Now, you are much, much younger than the
yes,
three of us here. So,
mm-hmm,
so what's your relationship with Springsteen and with this record?
Well, it's interesting, right? So 1975, I wasn't born yet. And we didn't have a lot of Springsteen in our house growing up. I think we only had, if I can recall, we only have a CD copy of his 87 album. I'm blanking on the name, but it's the one that came out after Born in the USA.
Yeah, Tunnel of Love.
Tunnel of Love, yes.
Tunnel of Love. So my relationship with Springsteen, with his music, has been pretty much non-existent up until about a year ago when we had Jesse Jackson from the Set Lusting Bruce podcast on our show. And then it was when he came on our show that I listened to Springsteen's fourth studio album and then loved it so much that I ended up actually buying the physical record. And then I started listening to more and more of Springsteen's catalog. And it was the first time I think I had ever really listened to music that delved into the topics of Heartland rock and Americana. I hadn't really listened to tunes like that before. So I thought Born to Run was a perfect introduction for Springsteen to really propel his sound to mainstream audiences. Because with the first and second, with his first and second studio albums, you know, no one really knew who he was. And like Mike touched on, he was under a lot of pressure and he had to bring his material out and he had to make some money. And this was definitely, I think, his magnum opus to really bring his sound to a larger audience. And after listening to the song to the entire album, I really found a connection with Thunder Road and Backstreets and, of course, Born to Run and Jungle Land.
Yes.
I'm not particularly a big fan of longer tracks, but this one was good. There was a story embedded in it that was phenomenal. And just, you know, the story of gang violence that was within Jungle Land, I think, really appealed to me for some reason. It was really captivating. And his poetry does really come out well in this.
Yeah, it's 9.5 minute song, right?
Yes, that's right.
Closing out the record.
Yeah, and memorable characters in that album, and that song, I should say. You know, and this record, for me, I started high school in 1981. I finished in around 1984, late 1984. And so I was just beginning to discover Bruce Springsteen at the beginning of that time in my life, and Born to Run had become the one that you would go back to and, like, you know, sing along to with your friends. And, you know, I remember just driving around with my friends as a, you know, freshman or sophomore in high school when we really, really were getting into Bruce, and just trying to figure out how to come back in perfectly on that 1, 2, 3, 4 break on Born to Run, like all of us together. You know, it was like a thing. You couldn't come in too early or you really looked bad. And if you came in too late, you're in trouble too. So it was things like that, and just, you know, analyzing the lyrics. And, you know, the song She's the One always meant a lot to me too. It was understanding, you know, the opposite sex, and Bruce in many ways kind of helped you with some of those transitions and figuring things out. So there's a lot of poetry that you sort of adapt, like an identity you kind of adapt for from some of the songs on this record. So I think the line drinking warm beer in the soft summer rain is one that probably we used a lot, you know, over the years.
It's interesting when you talk about Born to Run. It's a great time to be a Springsteen fan because you can, if you haven't seen the live show that's on Netflix from his Broadway performance, he breaks down a lot of these, your favorite songs, and gives you some background. For instance, you know, when he talks about, you know, when you say it's a death trap, I mean, he says, I was living in a death trap.
Right.
I mean, these words are literally autobiographical for him. You know, that really gets to you when you think about the personality of the music. I mean, when you guys did the 80s look, you know, I don't have an emotional connection to, like, Yes. I love to listen to Yes, but, you know, these songs hit you in the heart and in the brain differently than a lot of other music does.
That's really well said, Mike. I think that's a huge part of it.
I think you're right. I mean, we all know the song Born to Run, and I think part of the reason why that particular song has become his trademark song is because it does that so well. It works for both, you know, your head and your gut, right? You know, it there's something just so like exciting about hearing that song, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like every time you hear it, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that song. I never get sick of it. If I hear it, I gotta listen to it all the way through. I gotta turn it up, whatever. It's just there's so much just like passion and excitement in that song. But at the same time, the more you listen to it too, you get more stuff out of the lyrics. Like there's a certain, there's layers to that song as well, lyrically and emotionally.
Absolutely. And just some of the lines, I know Sam had mentioned Backstreets, but you take a song like Backstreets, One soft infested summer, me and Terry became friends. That's an amazing opening line to a song. What is a soft infested summer? I don't know, but I think I do. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't tell you, but when he sang that, you knew what it was. Like, you knew that it was something you understood.
He has an amazing ability as a songwriter to put you, the listener, yes, like in that place somehow, exactly, right? And I was thinking too, like, even like Born to Run in its most basic sense, like, you know, if rock and roll is essentially for kids, right, or teenagers, it's like, who doesn't feel that way? Like we gotta leave here. We gotta, you know, it's like it goes to the animals, you know, we gotta get out of this place. It's like everybody has that feeling at some point. Like, at some time when I am old enough to do it, I am getting out of this town, right? And that song just completely speaks to that spirit, which I find so funny and ironic for the guy who is so associated with New Jersey and sort of like this pride of New Jersey. But yet a lot of what he was writing about early on was like, I got to get out of New Jersey.
Right? Well, in fact, the punchline during the live show is he says, I currently live 10 minutes from my family home.
Yeah,
right now. You know, it's like, I really got out, you know?
Amazing.
And Thunder Road is the same way too. It's like, it's a town for losers. We're pulling out of here to win, you know?
And that, I was going to talk about Thunder Road. You know, we kind of skip, you know, right to the, you know, these this great song, you know, in the middle of the album. But Thunder Road sets you up on as a travel theme here. It's like, it's like he's not only going to take you somewhere, but he's like, maybe you might want to go somewhere too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. And I don't know what it is about, you know, his ability to conjure that sense of freedom. Maybe it is, like you said, Mike, that he felt it so desperately himself, you know, that really got that over, that he wasn't really messing around or just trying to be a fiction writer in that sense. So,
and I think, too, this is where you're really hearing, he touched on some of these themes before, like Rosalita and stuff like that, but you're really hearing him also recognize that this is like America, you know, America allows you to do this. It's not like other countries. Like, you can go out and explore this vast land and there's all this opportunity to find whatever it is you're looking for. And I think that's a lot of what this record really starts to recognize. And that's a theme I think you hear from Springsteen over decades, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Well said. And then there's Meeting Across the River.
I love that song.
I mean, I was going to say something about that, but then we got started and got excited about the idea of travel. I mean, that is just like a scene from a movie.
I mean, you're
just like in, all of a sudden, it just starts, and he has this setting and this mood, and it's just these guys talking, you know, and it just plays out. It's like a screenwriter.
It is in that sense, you know, it's fantastic. It's, you know, it's real Taxi Driver or something like that. It's really incredible. And we may have touched on this, you know, at some point, but that used to be the song I would skip, you know, that'd be the one that you would skip over. But then later, as you come to appreciate the album more, and that I think is another thing. I went through and listened to all these records again for the first time in a while. And, you know, it's amazing how you can take yourself back to where you were when you first heard it in certain moments and certain places and people. But also, it just plays fantastic. It sounds great. You can listen to it. You don't have the urge to do anything. You just let it flow over you. It's beautiful.
Well, I think these albums we're going to talk about in the week ahead, he learned how to perfectly sequence these songs. And maybe that was the help of you know, other folks too. You know, Little Steven and John Landau and everybody. But these, just going back and listen to them, it's almost like a piece.
Yes,
you know?
It is.
And you're just like, well, I don't really want to take a break now. Can't stop now. You know, I've got to get to Jungle Land, you know. So he really, these all just, you don't feel jarred from one song to the next in any way in this album. I mean, maybe when you get to the river, you know, you might get to that. But in these next few days we talk about, everything seemed to fit.
Yep. And a quick note on the cover. I mean, I think it's one of the most iconic covers in rock and roll history, with, you know, Bruce with his leather jacket and wooden Fender there, leaning on Clarence Clemons, you know, with kind of a knowing grin. You know, like they've been through the wars together, these two. And and it just is quite amazing.
Going back to this book, and this would be a perfect time for you, Sam, you know, since you've just started listing these albums. Reading Bruce's book will give you a lot of insight to where, you know, what he was thinking when he did these songs. He purposefully wanted a picture of him and Clarence on that album to break racial barriers and to say, this guy is up here with me and he's integral to what we're doing and what we're going to be doing. And if you're not on board, don't, you know, we don't need you.
Right. That's a really good point.
So you guys talked a little bit about how you got into this record. I will say I was a little bit late on it. When I was growing up and listening to rock radio, I mean, I heard Born to Run, you know, and I'm trying to think if maybe Thunder Road got some radio airplay. Yeah. I can't really remember, but of course, Born to Run, ubiquitous song. So I felt, you know, I had that. I didn't get into Springsteen until Born in the USA, because I was in high school then, and it was like that record was so huge and hit at just the right time, and I got that record. And then I think this is the second Springsteen record I got after that, because of course it's like, this is so great, I want to go back and listen to earlier stuff. Yeah. Well, the next one to get would be the Born to Run album. Right. And actually, when we talk about this later in the week, I was really late to some of the others that we're going to talk about.
Okay, cool.
You know, I didn't really get into those until much later on. So for me, these were like the two records that I had for the longest time, mm-hmm. were Born in the USA and then Born to Run. So, okay, real quickly, before we go, I think we should do this. I'm putting you guys on the spot here. I think we should do this throughout the week. Go around. You guys got the track listing and tell me your favorite song on the Born to Run album.
Okay.
And I will start. This is really hard because I want to say it's probably Born to Run, but I'm going to set that aside for a minute and then say it's Thunder Road. I mean, Thunder Road is almost really like a perfect song.
Yeah, absolutely is. I will go with Backstreets. That has always been my favorite song. Love that it closes out side one. I've always been a sucker for last song in side one. And again, that line I quoted, "Soft-infested summer, me and Terry became friends." That to me is the height of his poetry on this album.
Soft-infested summer, me and Terry became friends, trying in vain to breathe the fire we was born in. Catching rides to the outskirts, time fate between our teeth, sleeping in that old abandoned beach house, getting wasted in the heat.
For mine, it's like I mentioned earlier, Jungle Land.
Nice.
That's definitely my favorite. I'm not a big fan of songs that almost near 10 minutes, but this one is perfect.
It works.
And it tells a story.
Yeah.
The Rangers had a homecoming in Harlem late last night. And a magic rat drove his slick machine over the Jersey state line. Barefoot girl sitting on the hood of a Dodge, drinking warm beer in the soft summer rain. The rat pulls in the town, rolls up his pants. Together they take a stab at romance and disappear down Flamingo Lane. Will a maximum lawman run down Flamingo chasing her head in a barefoot girl? And the kids around here look just like shadows.
So I'm going to say we've decided we're not going to choose Born to Run purposefully, all right? Yeah. I'm going to take She's the One just because of the, you know, the bombast and everything. Yeah. And that song is recorded in mono, by the way.
Oh, wow.
So you, I don't know if you can really tell a difference anymore, you know, on the stereos we have now, but they recorded in mono because of the way Little Steven and Bruce wanted that.
We're the king of graces and the secret places that no one can fill. With our hands on her hips, oh, and that smile on her lips, because she knows that it kills me. With her suffering scream standing in that doorway like a dream, I wish she'd just leave me alone. Because French dream won't stop, and them boots and French kisses will not break that heart of stone. With her long hair falling and her eyes that shine like the midnight sun.
This really is an interesting result to show the quality of this album.
Yeah.
That you could have, each of us could pick a different song.
Yeah, totally. And with only 8 songs here, none of us have mentioned at all 10th Avenue Freeze Out, has become over the years like a concert highlight. You know, when they play that song, everybody goes crazy.
Yes. Right?
And then Night, which is just a blast of rock and roll.
It really is great song. Yeah. Like She's the One, it really just builds up into this ferocious kind of thing by the end. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
All right, cool. So we're going to do this all this week. So that means tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow we go with Darkness on the Edge of Town.
That's right.
Which is, I think most people would say, a really respectable follow-up, but really has different tones to it.
Completely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. We'll do that. As I mentioned, there's ways to support the show. You can subscribe on whatever it's called these days, Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
I heard they're getting rid of iTunes. That's like gone, but that's for another time. Then Spotify, Google, Stitcher, all that stuff. You can find the show.
Yeah.
You can also hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. Tell us what you think about the Born to Run album. Also, you can email us rock@suburbspod.com, or you can call the Suburban Party Line, 612-440-1984. And especially this week, how often should people listen?
Every day, I think.
There you go.
Very good. All right. We're going to step out into the night now. It is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm Mike Schneider.
And I'm intern Sam.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
you remember last time we did this, I think I spilled something or something. We had some issues. So I'm checking the wires in advance this time.
Yeah. Okay.
That was also beer week.
Well, there was that, but there was, you were referring to when, is that what you were referring to? When we did the beer
week? I think it was beer week. Didn't I spill some beer?
I don't know.
There was a beer spill.
Oh, no, I did, because I was trying to read the can and it was open. Remember? I was
like, dude, that was open.